Welcome to the marriage retreat, huh? This lesson that we're going to be talking about is going to be about conflict. So I know that they chose us because sometimes we are the best at dealing with conflict in our lives. 2 weeks ago, if you were a part of it, if you are a part of our zone, you know that that is far from the truth. 2 weeks ago was pretty rough for a moment in
for
our
him.
in our marriage, but. It's also fitting, too, to be here and to go through life and the situations that we have to deal with. Before we start, I want you guys to watch a clip. So the series This Is Us is awesome. I love it. Carrie gave an awesome example just a little while ago of what the series really is, and it's just real life. It's raw. It helps you to connect. It helps you to relate. So let's watch this little video clip, and then we'll come back and we'll talk with you guys a little bit.
Call him in the morning and apologize. Obviously, I'll fix this. I'm gonna go to some meetings, get help.
How long has it been going on, Jack? The drinking.
A few weeks.
Wow. I had no idea.
You haven't really been around.
Oh, got it. Awesome. Thank you. You drive the kids around drunk, Jack?
Of course not.
Of course not. You just drove to my show drunk. That would be some way to leave us.
Yeah.
You know, three teenagers and you...
Yeah. Sometimes people relapse.
You're not... a drunk, Jack. You're not. You drank too much for 1 year, 7 years ago, and then you stopped cold turkey. But I do find it convenient that this alcoholism of yours has suddenly rematerialized at the exact same moment that I finally have something happening for myself.
No. That is completely unfair.
Okay,
that
well,
is completely untrue and completely unfair. My father
yes,
was...
Yes, I know.
What happened with Ben?
He tried to kiss me.
And?
And... I'm sorry, are you kidding me right now? Are you actually serious?
Hey.
Oh, wow.
Great conversation, Rebecca. Way to hash this out.
The first time in years that I had something for myself. The first time in years that I want...
Say it.
No.
Oh, go ahead and say it. First time in years what? That you were fulfilled? Go ahead and say it out loud. That we don't fulfill you. Go ahead and say it out loud that your life is...
I have no life. I have zero life, Jack. I am a housewife to three teenagers who do not need me anymore. And I have a husband who waltzes in every night at 8 o'clock, if I'm lucky, goes to the kitchen, recaps his day for me, and then passes out upstairs at 10 o'clock. I have no life. I am a freaking ghost.
Well, you know what? That is something.
Uh-uh. No. Admit to me that you hated the fact that I had something happening for myself.
I hated again. That you lied
no.
about working with your ex-boyfriend.
No, that's total BS, Jack. You hated the fact that I was singing again.
I was fine with
you
it.
You didn't want me to have a career. You never
career?
Did.
You are a 40-year-old woman singing covers in pubs. That is not a career, Rebecca. That is ridiculous. And the fact that I am supporting this family, financially and emotionally, and still I am being attacked for not being supportive. That makes me want to ram my head through a damn wall.
Wow. Let your father out, Jack. Let him out. Doesn't that feel good? Doesn't it feel good to let go of the whole Mr. Perfect charade?
I have given you everything that you wanted. I have sacrificed for this family, yet you don't know that half of the load that I have had to carry.
Was it hard for you to make every single decision for this family?
You don't know what I've given up. You don't know the things that I've had to do. The crap that I've had to eat.
And I follow, follow.
I devoted my life to you so that you can have a life in front of my face. How dare you?
It is absolutely ridiculous.
You know, this is insane. This is insane. We love each other.
What do you love about me?
Huh?
What do you love about me? Tell me. The me as I am right now, not the me that you've conjured up in your mind over the years. What do you love about me right now, Jack?
Dun, dun, dun. Tune into Netflix and watch the rest of it if you would like to.
Actually, on Hulu.
yeah, Hulu too. Yeah, whatever it is, whatever it is. Man, hey, can't you relate? When you see that, when I see that, I see moments like that we've been in. I see just the realness of life, and no matter how much you want to try to avoid the conflicts that occur in marriage, they always, always happen. You start with two selfish people, which really, in a sense, that's what we are, you know, at the root of who we are in our sin, right? We're self-focused people. And when you bring those two self-focused people together in a marriage, obviously, there is going to be some fights and there's going to be some quarrels. When you mix in life, right, the troubles of life, the trials of life, you mix in people's different, you know, circumstances that they lived in growing up, two different households, the way that they were raised, and then all of a sudden the fire gets lit whenever you walk through daily life, and boom, quarrels happen, fights occur all the time.
Whatever their reasoning, you know, and they had like a million that came up in that little scene that they had for being in a fight. We all have our different reasons for our conflict in our marriage, right? What are some conflicts or sources of conflict that we see in the show, or really in the story of us, in the story of your marriage, in the story of ours? And we just kind of threw a quick list together, and maybe you can relate to some of them, but finances, time, children, for numerous different reasons. Family, in-laws, blended families, dishonesty, laziness, grief or loss can cause conflicts, addictions, past abuse, unfaithfulness, romance or lack thereof, sickness, lack of communication, nagging, control issues, unmet expectations in life in general, or the biggest one that I think is where you're going to eat. Or taking the family through the drive-thru with like seven people in your family.
Oh, I was just talking with Craig about that last night. Man, I hate going through the drive-thru. Hey, I'm going to order for everybody, okay? Everybody just be quiet. We'll get you food.
My grandpa, who was like the most gentle, hardly ever spoke up, even when he should have, type of men. The only time I ever see him like kind of just really lose it was in a drive-thru. And he like just, we were at Dairy Queen and he took off. He didn't feed my 83-year-old great-grandma or me or anybody. So like I flash back to that every single time. And it's funny.
And she recalls these things, yet she gives me so much grief.
I do.
Whenever we're there.
I never know what I want.
We're there. I love the the drive-thrus that have the menu before you get to the place to order them. I'm like, awesome, awesome. Hey, guys, be looking at this so that we can know what we're going to order here in a little bit, okay? Because we're going to be up in just like one more car, all right? Ashley, are you watching? I don't like to look at that one.
That is it.
I don't like to look at that one. What do you mean? It's the same one. Okay. Hey, McDonald's has been selling burgers for 50 years. You know there's a burger there.
Let's not linger.
What do we want?
We're not going to linger on that. The point is, no, you're done. The point is there's numerous different reasons to get into fights, to find conflict in your marriage. And it can be the stupidest, smallest of ones, or it can be things that are extremely heartbreaking and offensive.
And we can't generalize them all because everybody's different. We can't. The list that we came up with is not all of it, like Ashley was saying. It's a mixture of stuff. And in the midst of the conflict that you cannot avoid, you cannot throw out godliness because you felt wronged. Every day we go through situations in life where we are wronged by people. Does that give you the right to wrong them back? No. Whenever those situations happen at work and whenever you come home, do you need to take that out on your spouse or your kids or whatever that may be? No. So how do you really deal with the conflict in our lives? If we're going to stay committed, and really at the center, like what you're going to find out is that at the center of every one of the lessons, you're going to find God at it. And at the center of conflict, you have to find God. At the center of conflict, you got to make sure that you turn back to him. If you hold on to those commitments, the commitment to follow Christ, the commitment to follow your Lord, that will inevitably help you to make sure that that conflict becomes something that helps grow your relationship, that helps you to become more of a one instead of separate.
So in resolving conflict, we're going to look at some different ways that we can maybe, or tips, I guess, that we can help give you in resolving your conflict in your story. And the first thing is resolving conflict means defeating selfishness. Now, this is like the root of them. Marriage offers a tremendous opportunity to do something about selfishness over and over and over again. RJ and I have seen, I think, you know, the Bible's plan work in our lives, and we still see it work daily. The answer for ending selfishness is found in Jesus and his teaching, as RJ mentioned. He showed us that instead of wanting to be first, we have to be what? Willing to be last. Instead of wanting to be served, we must serve. Instead of wanting to save our lives, we must lose our lives. We must love our neighbors or our spouses as much as we love ourselves. You know, in short, to defeat selfishness, we must give up. We have to give up, we have to give in, and we have to give all. In Philippians 2, 1-8, it says, "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Have this attitude in yourselves, which also in Christ Jesus, who, although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant and being made in the likeness of men. Being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross." There's a lot in that. To experience oneness, you have to be willing to give up that will. But to do that, you first have to give up your will to Christ. Then you're going to be able to find the possibility of what a selfless relationship looks like. And if we could get outside of that give me, notice me, do this for me attitude, and I think focus more on, hey, I'm going to give to you, I want to notice you, I want to serve you, many of our conflicts would be avoided, you know, to begin with. We wouldn't have quite as many, because there's something about taking the focus off of yourself that enriches every and enhances every part of your life and your relationships.
And that's really difficult to do. Think about the midst and the height of an argument or a conflict in your marriage, if you were to pull back and you were to think, man, okay, pushing myself aside, what can I do to better this opportunity, to better this environment, to help her or him? Think about how many conflicts would be reduced, or the length of that conflict be reduced, if you were to have that kind of mentality. That kind of mentality that it says in that passage, listen, don't put yourself above anything. Don't put yourself above that person. Instead, put that other person above you. Push back the feelings that you're having a little bit, and let's focus them, not forget about them. That's not what we're talking about. We're not saying don't say anything. We're talking about focusing your feelings and your emotions so that the conflict can be resolved. And guys, if you're looking at the interest of each other first, ultimately that's going to be the thing that's going to reduce a lot of those arguments and those conflicts to a minimum. Number two, resolving conflict means that I need to return a blessing for an insult.
This is my least favorite.
So I had to talk on this one. And I'm not good at this either. You know, resolving conflict means that I return a blessing for an insult. In 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 8 through 9, it says this: to sum up, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead, for you were called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. So what does it really mean to return a blessing for an insult? Well, then you find out later on in the passage in verse 10:11, it says this: for the one who desires life, to love and see good days, must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. He must turn away from evil and do good. He must speak peace and pursue it. You know what that passage is saying? The passage is super, super clear that whenever you get insulted, you need to watch your tongue and what you respond with. And in the height of an intense argument or moment, isn't that difficult? So difficult. And as a matter of fact, it goes on, the later part of that passage in verse 10 and 11 goes on to say that when you get that insult, really your response should be focused on, do you want to have happiness in the future days? That's what it says. Really, now watch it. Hey, because what it says it right there. It says, for the one who desires life, love, and to see good days, you better be careful what you say. You better be careful in your response. And that is really, really difficult. Ashley says that she's not necessarily the best at that. Well, neither am I. You know, that video clip that you just watched, that was us a couple weeks ago. I was thinking nothing but things to hurt her, you know? That's sometimes what we do. And I look back on that and I was like, man, that was just so stupid. How could I ever expect for something good to come of the things that I just said? Think about that. When next time that you guys get in a quarrel or in a fight, think about that.
Yeah, I think like in everyday marriage terms, to me, what this verse says is you have to be self-controlled, which is difficult for me anyway, meaning you can't lose your temper, Ashley. You can't fly off the handle. You can't scream at him. You can't call him names. You can't choke him. You can't throw warm coffee in his face.
She's not really done that. She's thrown coffee at me.
What?
Hot coffee at my face. It wasn't real hot. It was lukewarm. It still burnt.
Because
still hurt.
Who does that?
I don't know who does that kind of stuff. That's like movie stuff. You don't see stuff like that.
And catch this, you can't even do the silent treatment like you saw your mama do to your dad. Because that's what dad was the more fly off the handle. But I knew if mom really wanted to stick it to him, she was going to look out the window and not say a word on the whole car drive. And so I'm a good mixture of both. Because I will start out and I'm going to intentionally come back at you as much as I can. Because I'm going to prove my point, and I don't even know what the point is anymore, but you're going to get it. And if you're not going to hear me screaming about it, I'm going to cut you off completely. And I'm not kidding. 2 weeks ago, 1 o'clock in the morning, I said, I'm going to get coffee. And I got in the car at 1 o'clock in the morning. I don't know. I so desperately wanted to make him feel, like, bad that I was, like, willing to – I don't even like going outside by myself.
I forgot about this. When she came back.
Let me
back,
finish. I'm the kind of person that if I get home late, like I went and saw It with Janice, and it was, I don't know, like 1 a.m. when we got back. And so I just watched a scary movie, and I called RJ and I said, I need you to come turn the front porch light out and watch me walk in the house. I don't even like to go outside in the dark by myself. It freaks me out. So we have woods, and I just imagine wolves, and I don't know. But if I'm mad enough, if I'm mad enough and I want to hurt him, I'm going to go get to McDonald's, which wasn't open, so it just made me even more mad, to get coffee at 1 o'clock in the morning. So you know, all just with the intent of saying, I'm going to insult him. But to resolve that conflict, and you see that in Jack and Rebecca lashing out too. In her anger, she belittles one of his greatest hurts, his father. Any other episode that you watch where his father comes into play, she's very sympathetic to him. But not when she's mad at him. She's like, oh, yeah, your father. You are not a drunk. You're not like him. And then, like, 5 seconds later, because she's not being She's not making any sense. She's like, oh, yeah, let your father out. So not like his father, and then he's just like his father. You know, it's crazy.
And then the same as Jack. You know, what did Jack say? Like she said, as soon as – it's just funny to me that all of a sudden you're going to start drinking again at the midst of me getting ready to start my career. And what was his words? And as soon as he said it, I was like, oh, man, he totally should not have said that. You know, he said, a career? You're 40 years old. You're singing covers at a pub. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, you could not be more cutting than that, you know? But you want good things to happen from that remark, right? It's real smart.
And I think when you're looking at that, being mindful and the ability to say, instead of following my natural tendency to lash out and fight back and just tell him off, you know, I'm going to change the course of this, and I'm going to find a blessing for him instead. Oh, man, like, not only can I not do all of the above, I have to look at this man who has wronged me, and I feel irritated by and hurt by, and find a way to bless him, whether that's by my patience, by controlling my tongue, or maybe saying, you know what, like, I love you. Like, why are we doing this? What's at the source of this? You know, are you hurting because you are drinking or whatever, you know, that you're going through?
I'm not drinking.
So just being mindful of that and realizing how important that is, that it means doing good, that sometimes doing good simply takes a few words spoken gently or kindly, or perhaps, you know, a touch or a hug or a pat on the shoulder.
Yeah, there's a lot of times in the midst of our arguments or fights or whatever, and I can hear Ashley expressing her feelings and her concerns, her thoughts, and what's going on and stuff. And some here lately, as I've grown in my wisdom and discipline over the 14 years that we've been married, I've learned to just kind of, that was a joke. I've learned to sometimes, man, just be quiet, and sometimes to give her a hug, to give her a touch, to really like look at her eyes and listen can just change the complete mood of the conversation, can't it? You ever, guys, speaking to you guys, try that out sometime. Be quiet for a second. Listen to what she's saying. We're going to talk about that here in a little bit. Just hug her. I'm really sorry about that. I see what you're saying.
And it doesn't always work, because sometimes you're like, don't touch me. But the goal is for it to work.
Okay. Well, then that's on her. If she says that, then that's her. I'm doing the best that I can. So resolve to, returning a blessing for an insult. Number three, resolving conflict means you are loving in your confrontation. But how? Am I going on here?
No, you were supposed to say something, but that's okay. We're going to give you guys a checklist on what this kind of looks like, having that loving confrontation looks like. Because there's a lot that goes, conflict could go, we could have a whole marriage retreat, I feel like, on conflict.
Yeah, how to properly deal with the conflict.
It's very hard to kind of make it, you know, fit into this 40-minute segment. We're going to try and just run through some specific tips for you, or a checklist to look at, and seeing, am I being loving in my confrontation? One of the first things that we had is check yourself. Is it even worth it? You know, and better yet, if you're unsure, and this is really about choosing your battles, and there are times where I, like, something's mustering up inside of me. Maybe he's at work, but, you know, like, I feel a certain kind of way about him. And he hasn't came home, or we haven't really fought it out or any of those things. And there's been times where I've had to, like, call up one of my friends or text somebody or talk to my mom and say, okay, this happened. Am I being fair? Is it even worth me being this upset, you know, about, like, give it to me straight. Is this something that God would even say, Ashley, like, you're being petty, you know, like, check yourself. Check and see if the battle is even worth it to begin with. And sometimes that means, you know, having other people check you for you, because we don't always see those things clearly. You know, you may find that you are being as petty as they come, but also realizing that there are times, I think, you know, where it is worth it, clearly, because you're going to have to go into conflict, but that you can do that in a way that is, I guess, beneficial, you know, because you kind of calmed yourself, you realized why you're going into this to begin with. So check yourself. Choose your battles. I think of socks. He leaves his socks all over. RJ's a clean guy.
I don't really think I leave
Please
a bunch
stop.
Of socks
That's not
everywhere.
True. He leaves socks. That's his thing. I God love him. He helps with everything
else.
As soon
as I get home, take them off, throw them.
But he leaves socks. No. Like, I'll find his dirty work socks sometimes in piles. And I, over the years, like, at first I was like, I'm tired of picking, like, oh, why can't you pick up your socks? And every time he left a pair of socks, I wanted him to know that he left that pair of socks. Like, you were going to know that you didn't pick up your socks and you wronged me. I'm not your mate, you know, or whatever. And I, you know, I would go around with this disgruntled attitude and I'd pick up these socks. And I really, you know, it was kind of funny because he went on a work trip and he was gone for like a week or something. And I got up, you know, a couple days and I realized there were no dirty socks at the end of the bed. And part of me was like, whew, like, that's nice. There's no dirty socks. And then the other part was like, but he's not here. And I wish kind of like I did see his stupid dirty socks and I had to pick them up. And I had this moment that was beyond me that I wished his dirty socks were on the floor. You know, so I've kind of learned since then, honestly, I don't think I even say anything anymore. I just
pick them up.
What? That's not true.
She's yelled at me so much about it. She honestly has.
I have
not been the best at this.
I really have just chosen in that area, you know, and that's something, ladies, that sometimes we need to look at. Is it even worth it? Just pick the socks up and put them in the laundry basket that's 2 feet away. It's, you know, whatever. Choose your battles wisely.
Yeah, I think also there's something that it's kind of like, you know, the socks for Ashley is, you know, is hers. Mine is when she puts her purse on the door handle of the door. Drives me crazy. Because anybody, you know, weight on a door obviously throws it out of rack, and then the door's not going to shut. And I'm just thinking, hey, babe, you're going to mess this door up. You know, you keep putting your purse there. Why don't you put it on the table or whatever? Well, you put your socks down on the floor and say, well, I'm waiting for you to put your purse somewhere where I tell you I'm going to keep throwing my socks down here. Somebody. So it's like that petty, yeah, that pettiness. Let's watch out for that.
And I think in that checking your attitude, we hit on that some with returning the blessing for an insult. But will your words, ask yourself, will your words help or hurt? Will they bring healing and wholeness and oneness, or are they only going to make you feel further isolated? Loving confrontation says, I care about you, I respect you, and I want you to respect me, and I want you to know how I feel. But don't hop on your bulldozer and run your spouse down. Watch your words. Watch your facial expressions. That's a big one for me. Approach it lovingly. Proverbs 25:28 says, like a city that is broken down and without a wall, so is a person who cannot control his temper. And when I read that, I was like, well, shoot. Like, my walls are completely broken down sometimes. But if I don't fix the problem, you know, or if I don't fix the problem by lashing out, I leave my marriage vulnerable to further attack and brokenness. So watch your attitude in those things.
Third checkpoint, check your timing. Don't confront your spouse, for example, when he's tired from a hard day's work. You know, as soon as they come, I remember this happening, you know, a couple times or whatever. I'd be working, you know, just work all day and come home, and it's just like as soon as I come in the door, you know, Ashley's got something to say to me. I'm like, please just leave me alone for a second, would you? You know, pick your time. Be conscious of the timing of the things that you're going to say. You know, don't confront your spouse whenever, you know, they're in the midst of, you know, challenging the kids or correcting the kids or whatever, you know, or whenever the moment's when the intensity's high. Watch out for the timing. But don't wait too long, right? It's like, don't watch your timing, but don't wait too long. Really, it says, while waiting for the right time is important, you know what I mean? Waiting too long to say the right thing can be just as bad. The little argument that the big argument that Ashley and I got into a couple weeks ago, you know, it was a couple days, you know, I don't remember, it was a couple days that we were just very quiet, distant, and too prideful to speak up and correct it on my end, or waiting to see if she is going to do it. You know, watch your timing.
I think with the timing thing, checking your timing can bring about compassion. There was a point in time when RJ's dad passed away, and it was unexpected. And if you guys knew Jim, crap. I didn't expect to cry. You knew how much he loved his dad. But there was, and anybody close to me, really close to me knew, I felt like for like a year at least after Jim had passed away that my husband was like a different person. Like I didn't recognize some things about him. It had changed a lot of the way he functioned, I felt like. And I remember, like, in that time, like, 6 months in, watching, like, he didn't play as much with the kids. You know, he wasn't as he didn't have like as much joy when he came home. I felt distant, you know, from him, and I felt like I couldn't like fix it for him. You know, but on one end of that, like, I felt super sympathetic, and on the other end of it, like, I was torn because there was things like that I needed him to do, and I needed him to function, and I think God needed him to, you know, to still continue to love teenagers and invest time and play with the kids and do family devotionals and engage, because like our family still needed that. But it was very difficult for me to know how to address that and still show like compassion, you know, to him, knowing he had been through something that I mean, I loved Jim, but I couldn't fathom it because I wasn't actually, you know what I mean, his blood. And so it took a lot of like me seeking counsel and saying like, and talking to people who had lost their parents and saying, I remember talking to my mom and dad a lot and saying like, is it okay for me to address this? How do I address this? Because that was a big deal for me, because naturally if I see something, you know what, you're going to hear it like, and you're going to know about it. But to step back and look at the timing and what was affecting him and the circumstances, I think allowed me to approach things differently and in a way that was better and compassionate. And so when I did say something, he heard it. So when I went into it, it was like, babe, I know you're hurting. I know I can't even fathom how much. I don't know what to do. I want to help. But like, I need you to be present. You know, like, our kids need you to be present. And you know what? When I said that, actually, like, RJ, who is the calm one, I remember him just getting, like, angry. Not at me. I think just the situation and, like, frustrated. And I don't even know. Yep, surely you remember it. But he was so angry, and he just, like, tears welled up. And he was standing by our front door. And I just remember he punched the front door. And it was like I don't know if it's metal or what. But, like, his knuckle prints were still in that door. And, you know, his knuckles were bleeding. And he was just crying. And I was able to step back instead of being like, are you kidding me? Why would you freak out and punch the door? I just kind of, like, sat there and just, like, let him grieve. You know what I mean? And I didn't get on to him about throwing a temper tantrum or messing up my door that I painted, you know, or whatever. I just kind of stepped back and was like, okay, like, the timing here is for me to, like, love him, but still be honest and still speak truth to him. So be aware of what's going on in your spouse's life. If they're dealing with stuff with their family, if they've had a miscarriage, if they have longing for something, then they don't have that, and you know there's this deep hurt with them, or there's a sickness, or there's all these things, look at them and be able to have the compassion to say, maybe it is time to say something, but I need to be very cautious of how I approach this conflict and be loving in it.
Ashley did, she was great throughout my dad passing, but timing is difficult when you don't know why different things happen, and then you're to accept it, and you're to go through life with it, and you when you have somebody by your side to be able to help you through that, it makes things so much easier to sit back and to allow God to work through time. His timing is maybe one of the more difficult things that we have to go through in life, but it is a guarantee in the Word and through your Father in heaven that he will always make things right. Always. And right doesn't always mean easy in the way that we want it. That's the difficult thing. So while we have these checklists, you got to check your humility as well. Check your humility. If you're going to start dishing some things out to challenge your spouse with, if you got some things on your mind that you want to say, you better be prepared to listen to the same thing. You know, what you often find out sometimes is even in the midst of you wanting to say something to your spouse, the things that you see, you might actually find out that it's not really them, it's really you, you know? So, and being humble allows you to be able to listen to that.
I think, too, the next thing you got to kind of look at is check your issue, meaning during the discussion, stick to one issue at a time. That doesn't mean bring up several, and don't save up a series of complaints and let your spouse have them all at once. So 2 years and 8 months ago and 5 seconds ago when I got dressed up for that date and I took all that time and the kids were going crazy, but I got them, I got their clothes and I got their stuff together and I figured out the babysitter and I sent them to my mama's house and then I got dressed up and I looked really pretty and all you did was ask me, where are we going tonight?
And this is the
guy's response. You didn't have a date planned out. You didn't tell me that I looked pretty. You didn't. And so that's why 2 years and 8 months ago, I'm mad now that you, I don't even know, but I'm mad.
Stick to one issue.
You know, and so you're taking your hoops out and everything else. So, you know, I think with that being said, that, you know what that means? That means you better watch the way you hold on to grudges, better watch the way you hold on to bitterness. If you want conflict to win in your marriage and really you lose for that, choose to hold on to everything and choose to unleash it all at once and not deal with one issue at a time. Because, I mean, that fight weeks ago, we have one of those big fights probably, I don't know, every 5 years or so, yeah. I feel like. But, man, every time I say, I'm not going to let this happen. And then he says something, I'm like, but that other time. And then we go, you know, that fight went into like 50 different sub-fights that, you know, shouldn't have been. And that's why for 2 days we were fighting about it. Had we just stuck to the issue and every time we had those complaints, you know, handled them the way that God had asked us to, we probably wouldn't have been in that big a fight. So sure. Make sure that you stick to one issue at a time.
And when you guys are what did we write down there? Oh, check your listening skills. Yeah, check your listening skills. When you're keeping it one thing at a time and your spouse is saying something to you that they want to confront you with, make sure that you're listening. You know, listening, a lot of times, I think a lot of times, sometimes we just, we're listening with the intent to rebuttal, you know. Ernest Hemingway says this, most people do not listen with the intent to understand. They listen with the intent to reply. That statement is huge. It's huge. When your spouse is pouring out their feelings to you and their thoughts and what's going on with them and their frustrations and everything, you should not be looking like this.
Jack and Rebecca, they were both talking. Yeah. At one point, they're both just screaming like no one is here. Like, it's not going anywhere. They're just screaming at each other. Well, you said that's ridiculous. I don't feel like I'm anything. Blah, blah. He's talking at the same time. There's like zero listening at that point. They're done listening. They just want to get their point across.
Yeah. And it's a lot of times if you just listen to what they're trying to say, you know, and listen to what they're not saying. You know, they're not saying that they hate you. They're not saying that this. They're not saying that they're going to leave you. They're not saying this. But you hear a key word, and that key word automatically tunes you to something else. But they didn't even really say that. Pay attention to what your spouse is actually confronting you with. Pay attention to what they're trying to communicate. Even if it's not the most eloquent way for them to communicate it, listen to what the root of what they're trying to express so that whenever you actually get to respond, you respond properly. Instead of reactively.
So with all those check marks, those are things that equate to love, even in the midst of conflict. And we're going to play one last clip and talk just a little bit more and be finished.
Story. What do you guys want to hear? Funny story, sad story?
What fight?
The big fight? Oh, when she came home. So I'm late. Okay, I'll tell you a little bit of what happened. So,
hey, where are we at on that clip?
As soon as the video's up. The video's there? Okay, well, tell me, okay? You tell me whenever the video's ready so that we can move on. So finally, I'm just like, you know what? I'm just gonna kind of be quiet. I'm not gonna really talk that much anymore. She's not listening. I'm not really listening. I could care less. So I'm just like, you know, I guess we're gonna have to deal with this later on. So I stupidly kind of just get ready to, I'm just gonna go to bed. I'm just gonna fall asleep. So Ashley, oh, is it? Ashley decides that I'm gonna watch a couple videos on my phone with the volume up a little bit right here by RJ while he's trying to sleep. So I'm just like,
no, that's not what.
Well, that's what
was
happening, and so I'm just like,
what was happening was.
So I just got up and I just went into the living room. I fell asleep in the living room.
That's not what
happened.
And
I went to get my blanket.
You were. That is not what happened.
I went to the living room.
Come on.
I went to the living room. And I get my blanket. Ashley comes walking through.
Yo. Supposed to have another date the night that we met. Did I ever tell you that?
No.
The woman that sold me the Chevelle. She set me up. Then I saw you. And I stood the other girl up.
I wonder who she was.
I never have. You've asked me a question before. What is it that I love about you now? So I'm gonna start with the obvious. I love the mother that you are. I love that you are still the most beautiful woman in any room. And that you laugh with your entire face. I love that you dance funny and not sexy, which makes it even sexier. Most of all, I love you are still the same woman who all those years ago ran out of a blind date because she simply had to see. You're not just my great love story, Rebecca. You were my big break. And our love story, I know it may not feel like it right now, but baby.
Hi.
Hi. I promise you, it's just getting started.
That's right after the fight. You know, that's the night after the fight. Awesome scene. And which kind of leads into our fourth point. Resolving conflict means that I remember the boy, the girl whom I fell in love with and then pursue them. I watched there was a Ashton Kutcher movie with what was that name of that movie?
I didn't know you were
Just Married, I think. Yeah, Just Married. Christina Ricci, was that who it was? Yeah.
No.
Yeah, the other girl. So anyway, one of the coolest lines in that movie was sometimes when you see the pictures that are laying around, those you see the happy moments, and those happy moments is what that one snapshot gets you to the next happy snapshot. Sometimes, you know, when you see the pictures that are around, you see the good times, but in the midst of everything in between those pictures, sometimes is a lot of strife and a lot of struggle, right? And sometimes at the moment of a conflict, to look back and remember the beauty that you see in your spouse is a reflection of 14 years in the making for me. Look back at the girl or the boy that you fell in love with long ago and make sure that you pursue them.
I think, you know, what I love about it is they're still in the midst of conflict in this. Things aren't fixed, you know, but Jack takes a minute and he recalls why he loves Rebecca. And he actually remembers the very first time that he saw her. And oh my gosh, Jack, you know what I mean? Like, where she's like, I wonder who that girl was. And he's like, I don't. I never looked back. All I saw, you know, was you. There's also comes a point, and it's a little bit later on, where they're still dealing with the same conflict. And Rebecca, like, has like that breaking point where she's trying to remember who she was and she can't remember. She can't remember who she was at all, and she needs Jack there to like remind her. So like even though she's like mad over this, she goes and she finds him and she says, you know, I can't remember myself without you. I can't remember my life or my worth without you. And to me, like whenever I'm in the midst of like whenever honestly I want to stay mad at him to prove my point. There is many times where I take a second and like I remember, you know, like 15 years ago, you know, standing in the back of this parking lot helping run a Greater Alton Teen event, you know, and being covered in mud because I was helping these little kids over an obstacle course wall and looking across this field and seeing this guy in a white button up and khakis, you know, and thinking, oh man, he's cute, you know, and going up and saying, hi, you know, I'm Ashley, and shaking hands.
I know
hands.
Who you are. I did know who she was.
I was watching
her the whole time.
I did not know who he was. And I take those moments honestly, and I try to like string them together, and I remember why I fell in love with RJ to begin with. And when I do that, when I remember that he's been faithful to me, that he has been an incredible father, that when I'm sad, he's the person that reminds me of my worth. And when I feel the least beautiful, he's the one that can make me feel whole again. You know, when I remember those things, even when I'm mad, I'm able to set myself back and say, he's not my enemy. You know, like I'm mad at him, but he's not my enemy. I love him, and and it makes me want to pursue him.
Also in the movie, there's a spot where Rebecca goes and she chases down Jack after he goes, like after this, they're, you know, they separate for a little bit. He goes, stays with a buddy. She goes over to the buddy's house to get him. And he's just like, he's upset. He's broken. He's ashamed is what he says. And for a man to feel ashamed or embarrassed, that's difficult. Same thing with you ladies. Difficult for a man to be able to express that, you know, and he says, I can't go back into my house. I just can't go back into my house until I fix this. And she chases after him anyway, right? She says, no, you're coming with me. You're mine. We're in this together. We're going to fight through this together. She plans this special elaborate date. And it's kind of like the beginning process of them working through this huge major conflict. It's awesome.
So in conflict, we must still pursue the man or woman that we fell in love with. But also, and the last thing is, resolving conflict ultimately means that I am forgiving. The key to maintaining an open and intimate and happy marriage is obviously God, but it's to ask and to grant forgiveness quickly. But don't scam over that ask part, because that's the key. That's the I'm sorry part, the pivotal point, and probably my greatest weakness in our marriage. Our RJ always says, man, when you say sorry, what is it that you say to me?
It's like, I think of what Juan said, man, it's like
sorry.
Warm butter on a hot biscuit. Just it's like
a hot roll.
The best thing ever when she says, I'm sorry. And I'm just like, that's all I wanted. That's all I've ever wanted.
And so being that person... Being that person that is able to say, man, you know, I'm gonna be the one that steps up and says, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, I've wronged you, and I'm sorry. I love you. But then after the apology comes that grace and forgiveness part. Forgiveness is essential. You know, in the Bible, Jesus said, for if you forgive men for their transgression, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive men, then your Father will not forgive your transgressions. So if God forgave me based on how I forgive my spouse, and when I say forgive, remember, grudge holding. Do you really forgive or do you hold? Do you just hold it on just enough to throw it back in their face later? That's not forgiveness. That's not grace. Forgiveness means you're releasing them of an offense. So when you say I forgive you, you release them of that offense. And you remember that. But if God forgave me based on how I forgive him, how much grace am I going to be shown? And that can be very challenging to look at.
As the instruction is clear, it's always been clear. You find it in scriptures all throughout. And at the beginning of the lesson, we talked about God's word and God being at the center. At the end of the lesson, we're talking about God's word and God being at the center. That's the only hope that you have. The only hope. And the best thing about that is that we have every opportunity, every day, to be able to grab a hold of that hope. The truth of the matter is that by the time you end up driving home, you might be in another little conflict. Okay, well, so what? You got in a fight. The fights is what can make you stronger if you go about them the right way. And, you know, I love at the end of that little video clip whenever he says, you know, it may not look like the best thing in the world right now, basically. Our marriage, what we're going through may not be the best thing in the world right now, but maybe we're just getting started. We've been together for 14 years, and we've gone through so many different things and trials in our lives that it really is astonishing that we are here today, being able to talk with you guys about conflicts, but we are so much better because of them. It has refined us. And the only thing that's really refined us in the midst of those struggles is allowing God's word to be at the root of it, at the base of it, and allowing God to guide us. And if you do the same, you'll find out that your marriage is just getting started. Let's pray. Father, I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk with everybody today. Thank you for the opportunity to be able to have a beautiful, amazing, loving bride beside me in life. Up here as we talk, just to be able to joke around with and have fun with. And Father, when I look at my life, there's really no rhyme or reason for me to be able to be here the way that I grew up. And that story stands true for a lot of people in the crowd, in the world. But with our scripts, with our stories, with our conflicts, Father, you want to be able to guide us through all of them. If we trust you, if we follow you, if we're obedient to you, and we watch the things that we say whenever we're frustrated and emotional, Father, you can help us to get to the other side better. Thank you for your love. Thank you for your son, and I praise in his name. Amen.